Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thanks so much for staying with us. Now, you may have been watching the proceedings regarding Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane seeking her payout from the Public Protector's Office. And there's been a bit of a back and forth. She says, you know, she's entitled to a 10 million rand gratuity given to outgoing public protectors. They have said themselves, well, no, you know, you didn't just leave. You were asked to leave. You were found guilty of misconduct and incompetence by a parliamentary inquiry. So let me just try and bring in somebody who can give us a better sense of all of this, legal expert, Mpumelelo Segalala. Thanks again for making time for us. Mpumelelo, good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and also good evening to your listeners.
So it's quite an interesting one, because ordinarily, all things being equal, she would have been given her money. There would be no problem. What's the problem now?
The problem now is, when do we calculate the gratuity and when does it start to apply? Especially when the vacation from office is not one which is due to the lapse of time or the contract has come to an end for a lack of a better word, the person has been fired.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the legislation in the manner in which it has been written, it simply says a gratuity on vacation of office.
Mm.
That is how then it is calculated. Now, you then have to come back and do a simple analysis. Did you vacate voluntarily, or was it were you fired, basically?
Exactly. That's the thing. That's the sticking point. Because the law has not clarified what vacating means. And if I recall, Advocate Mugai Tobi was saying, look, when you look at what is prescribed, none of the above speak to her type of leaving office. And so what then do we do in this case?
Definitely. Then we come back to the interpretation and say, what did the drafters of the legislation and whatever policies that are there actually mean when they're talking about the vacation? But then go a step further and then look at the constitution under section 194. Mm. It's very specific. It says removal from office.
Mm-hmm.
So you are going to vacate your office and then you're going to be removed from the office.
Mm.
And that's the process that has taken place here. Then the question would be, in the ordinary meaning, would you offer some gratuity to a person that has been removed from office, or are you going to offer gratuity from a person that has left the office
mm-hmm.
due to the lapse of time, and you simply say to them, thank you for serving the manner in which you served us. Here's a little something to go home and make sure that you'll be able to live a much more comfortable life. I think that's where the court is going to come and be able to deal with those issues and check. Would a person that has been impeached in this particular manner, remember, this is not just an ordinary impeachment where one is fired by a simple letter. You have a committee that sits, you have a parliament that takes a decision, and they recommend to the president, and the president makes a decision of saying that I'm removing you from office. So it's not just an ordinary removal.
How far can this case go? Because I assume there will be a lot of appealing. She may even say, which anyway we've seen, you know, that the process of removing her, she has always said, was not fair. So yes, there was removal. There was a committee that was presiding over this thing. But she has consistently said, even right there, she didn't feel that she was treated fairly.
It can go up to the Constitutional Court, especially on this aspect. But maybe as a litigation strategy, it would have been much more advisable to say, I'm not going to fight about the interpretation of the word gratuity and vacation and removal, what it means. I want to deal with the manner in which the process was done.
Mm.
And then after the process has been done and dusted, it's going to be easy to read into whether what they did was correct or not, knowing very well that the gratuity is there. Maybe you can go to court and say, give me an undertaking that you are not going to pay, or this money is going to be placed in abeyance, I'm going to get it at a later stage once I've done my appeal processes. And if you get those, then maybe she would have stood a much stronger chance in the ring fencing of the money while you're still fighting your battles as to whether the process was okay or not.
So in other words, even though the process of impeaching her has been concluded, in her filing application, she could still refer to the fact that she still believes that the process was not fair.
Yes, she could, because remember, the decision which was taken by the president, if you then take it on review, you then say, Mr. President, you've been given information which is poisonous here.
Yes.
You have a committee that said, looked in the following factors, these are the procedural flaws that were there.
Mm-hmm.
On the merits, these are the marital flaws that were there.
Mm.
That same sort of poisoned or defective report is then sent into Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Once it reaches Parliament, one issue that I have with it is that the discretionary process of all the parliamentarians was not utilized. They all voted in a head mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Then where the duties of the parliamentarians to be objective? Because if you are going to vote according to party lines, you might as well
mm-hmm.
have one representative of each political party and say to them, if you say yes, then it means the whole percentage of a political party then agrees. The reason why you have individual members sitting there is that they're supposed to apply their discretion, use their own intellect to say, are we doing something which is correct or not? And then you go lastly to the president and say, Mr. President, you then have an obligation in duty to check whether procedurally and merit-wise everything has been followed to the T, which is why you have the prerogative of saying, I'm not going to sign this particular law into power, or I'm not going to action this decision because I think something has taken place which is incorrect. I'm sending it back to Parliament in order for Parliament to do the whole process again. Mr. President, you then failed in doing that. Hence, which is why I want the court to then investigate these three stages and check whether everything was done correctly in accordance with the law. Two things may happen then. You can come back victorious. If you come back victorious, then you say, I do not wish to go back to being a public protector. I wanted to be presumed that I vacated the post, the office in a proper manner. That is when the privilege is going to apply. Or the other would apply, and then the Home Court can come back, or any other court can come back and say, well, there are no procedural flaws that were there. Everything was done according to plan. Unfortunately, you were fired.
All right, let's move on to this one now. Chief Justice Zondo bade us all farewell, starting with a dinner yesterday and then today a judgment that was, I suppose, quite very much in his nature. What did you make of the judgment today?
I think it would have been proper, almost signaling to a last call when it comes to law enforcement officers, of saying that this is going to be my last call of duty, and after I'm finished with the judgment, only then I can come and then address. In fact, that's what we do. That's the normal practice within the judiciary.
Mm.
So it was almost inevitable that on his last judgment, then you're going to find members of the legal profession coming in and sort of making a speech to say how remarkable you've been, your contribution towards the legal profession, and the challenges we are still lay ahead. When it comes to the judgments,
yes.
I think he did an impeccable job.
Mm-hmm.
You have a band like the Abad Basim Tondo,
yes,
which those protections have been there.
Yeah.
You have the famous the private use of cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a judgment which was penned by him. So there are a number of judgments which will be remembered or will go down in history as being penned by the Chief Justice during his tenure.
And of course, today's Judgment Defence Act being quite poignant as well, I think, to be the very last one that he hands down.
Definitely. It's again things which is going to go down in history in terms of saying this were his last words. I agree with most of the manner in which he was drafted in his judgment. The only disagreement that I had on a personal level.
True to your form, Pumelelo, yes. That's why we like you. Yes, go ahead.
Was the insertion of possibilities of saying that if Parliament does not change this particular law, then you must read into the law the following things.
Mm.
I thought it was a bit overstepping because that's the role of the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that you're going to find is that if I have a problem with the read in part,
mm-hmm.
where do I go to? Because Parliament can come back and say, we did not insert this part.
Mm.
It did not go under public scrutiny.
Mm.
There was no public consultation that took place, so we're not liable for it. So it was only in those instances in which I had felt maybe
overstepping the mark.
Yeah. But other than that, when it comes to the manner in which his legal jurisprudence, the manner in which he courts cases, his understanding of certain things, I think he did a very good job.
Well, overall, what one would say, and you would have to just maybe elaborate on that if you agree with me, I would say he's always been a conservative kind of judge. In other words, his interpretations for me have been quite conservative, not leaning towards thinking outside of the box, so to speak.
In certain instances, yes. Even though on the cannabis one, you could see that he was sort of moving astray to say, here's an act that has always been regarded as something which is against the law. Mm. I'm now legalizing, but I need to control how that legalization is going to take place so that it is not exploited by certain individuals. There's still a very gray area as to how that is applied.
Mm.
And if you could call any police officer, they'll tell you it's very difficult to find someone, whether you want to book them in or not, especially if they're going to search for private use, unless if the quantity which is found in them is extremely huge, and then you say, actually, you are dealing and not using for private use.
Hmm.
So it was in certain processes, someone who was a bit conservative, but it is understood, it's taking into account the era in which it comes from.
Hmm.
Those type of judges, they are conservative in their nature, and maybe you would see much more liberal judgments from judges which are going to come maybe in the later part of or after 2015, because they're much more liberal to say we need to change the status quo. It can't mean that this is how we want things to be.
Nearly three decades in the judiciary, but a very short stint as a chief justice, one may say, and quite a big chunk of that being bogged down by the Zondo Commission. Your sense of that, you know, of how then do we then look at that and then judge his tenure as a chief justice?
I think there must be a way in which we're going to say whoever the chief justice is, they must find a way of splitting their duties.
Mm,
firstly, focus on the law and writing what the law is about, but most importantly, don't forget that you are the head of the administration,
mm-hmm.
and you want to see you moving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a bit embarrassing if you're going to get a 55% performance as the head of the judiciary within the court in which you preside on due to judgments that have been issued, which is the core issue of why a person would go to court in order for that judgment to be done and dusted.
Mm.
So I think maybe it's a challenge that must be looked at by the future Chief Justice to say, how are you going to be enable this process to move forward? And then secondly, is the issue of the judicial training. One, the training of the judicial officers that have already been appointed to say, you can never learn enough of any particular subject. So even within law, you still find ways of saying that even though I'm a judge, I must still go to train. But most importantly, let's speak about those aspirant judges. Such a that is there, but which may be a bit difficult in order for an ordinary person to attend to. Then secondly, you have another challenge of being invited to act.
Mm.
So I don't wake up and go to the provincial division and say, can I act for the next 2 months? It's a process that needs to be followed. Now, if there's no clear guidelines as to how that should take place, then you don't have a clear process of saying, we want to make sure that by the end of the month or by the end of this year, for example, we have at least 20 judges or potential judges that we can pull from to say, can you please go and apply?
Mm.
You've got enough civil stints, enough criminal stints. You've seen your judgments. You have 10 or 20 judgments that you have written. If you go to the JSA for interviews, you're not going to be found wanting.
Mm.
That can be seen, or the shortage of that particular expert can be seen in the number of non-appointments that we are getting. In fact, even within the Constitutional Court, there's no such. It's difficult to fill in a vacancy, which then would mean, what is the recruitment process that you are following to say that the person that has presided in the provincial division in the SCA, at the end of the day, will find their way to be an acting constitutional court judge.
And I mean, that I would say is where he actually fell short. We have not been able to deal with exactly what you're saying, you know, the issue of the appointments of judges. Yes, and I know that Justice Meyer has been quite concerned and raises the issue of the capacity of the current judges. We need to do something about increasing and creating more posts. So that's a process. But again, he was bogged down by other things. There are many, many other, what I would call administrative issues that I think as a Chief Justice, he probably was not able to attend to. The courts and budgets and all the things that we now know are still the responsibility of a Chief Justice.
Mm. And those are the core things, because they speak directly to the service delivery component of what the court should be, not only within the Constitutional Court, but in all the other provincial divisions that are there. A simple logistical issue of saying it's a person who stays in Kwanongom.
Yeah.
In order for them to file a matter in the High Court, they need to drive down either to the Devon Coastal Division or go to PMP. Look at the petrol, look at the amount of time, look at the amount of expenses. Do we call that access to justice or not? Are there any innovative ways in which that can be achieved? It's some of the things in which we would expect from a Chief Justice to say, here's a solution, go and neutralize it within the provincial divisions.
So, I mean, it's an unfair question, but you can say it now because he's leaving. How do you score him?
Pardon?
I'm saying it's an unfair question, but you can now tell us because he's leaving. How do you score him? How did he fare as a Chief Justice?
I think that let's separate the two. As a hardcore judge, yes, I would say plus minus 80%. The 20% been talking about the overstepping, which I was alluding to earlier. But as an administrator, I would say plus minus 50%. There's still a lot of
work to be done. Yeah, I agree with you. I think as an administrator, I think he was overwhelmed. Maybe that's the way to put it. I'm not sure we're able to see the kinds of improvements that we need. And as exactly as you're saying, it's at the cold face of what you and I experience when you go to a court. As for service delivery purposes, it's very difficult. Dilapidation, just many backlogs and the like, and that was still under his watch, and I think he's failed in that regard.
Definitely. There's still room for improvement. Chief Justice Meyer will then come in and say, yeah, the innovative ways, go and utilize them. I want to make sure that there are no backlog cases and you're able to deal with cases as soon as possible or as soon as they come.
All right. Thank you very much, legal expert Mpumelelo Zikalala there, as we see the Chief Justice Zondo retiring and bidding everybody farewell today was his absolute final judgment. And in comes Justice Meyer.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.